you enjoying the weather. It's really nice. But you know, when we turn on the news sometimes, we kind of forget about the weather. The news is not so nice, you know, the things that are going on. From locally, you know, you watch the news, you see, even our rural area, you see all kind of bad things, people being killed and robbed and whatever. And then, of course, it gets worse on the national scene. And today I was going to talk about, will America turn to God? You know, I think most we'd all agree that we've turned away from God. We're going in the wrong way. But in these times of trouble in America and the world, do we see our leaders and the rest of us too, do we see our leaders and our people crying out to God for answers to our problems and asking for His guidance and forgiveness for that matter? Maybe a day of national prayer would be in order, but we really don't see these things happening. And I think lately some of us wonder why our leaders don't stand up for Christians around the world who are being persecuted, being tortured, killed in every way, driven from their homes and their country. And instead, our leaders seem more interested in defending the image of Islam for some reason. But then we look around and see that Christianity is not all that valued in our own country, by the ruling class at least. It's really kind of under attack. Not really welcome in public places, for sure. God's word is not welcome many times. In our centers of higher education, they deny there is a God. They believe in evolution. They deny His creation and ascribe it as just a mere chance, which on closer look, that kind of breaks down, but that's what happens. And some of our leaders will ridicule those who believe in God and His authority, and they'll accuse them or say that, well, they like to cling to their guns and religion. And what does the ruling class cling to? Well, I think they cling to politics, science, humanism, and political correctness, as best I can see. I think we'd rather cling to the Bible. I think that's a much better thing to cling to. And how is America doing in this environment where we have been led down the road of rejecting God, His law, and His guidance? And I kind of emphasize that led down the road because we are led down the road through a lot of deception, a lot of bad education. You know, what can we expect when we send somebody to school for 12 or 15 years and they're taught evolution and other things? So how are we doing? Are we more free under this, you know, in this atmosphere? I really don't think so. We find ourselves being called on to give up freedom in the name of safety and security and different things. Are we more peaceful? Well, it'd be hard to imagine we are when we watch the news and see what's going on, you know, different groups up in arms over different things. And are we more happy? Well, I guess that's a little harder to define, but I doubt that we're more happy. You see a lot of depression and different things around. And are we more prosperous? That's a little easier to define because you can look it up in statistics. We have less people working, less people in this nation employed now than we had. You'd have to go back to the late 70s. And that's amazing because you expect each year we're going to get more people working because of population. And the income of the middle class has dropped, I think, something like $3,000 per year over the last few years. So I don't think we're more prosperous. And are we more united? Well, that doesn't seem to be. When we look around, we don't see a whole lot of. We see a lot of divisions, whether it's male, female, race, whatever. We have many divisions in the country. And Are we more respected in the world? Well, there again, I think the answer has to be no. Our allies don't really trust us. They're not sure where we stand now, I think, on many things. They don't trust us. Our enemies don't fear and respect us. Just most any little small country now, they don't mind to blast the United States. And we've gone from the largest creditor nation to the largest debtor nation in just a couple, 3 decades. And that might not seem too alarming to some people, but it's a bad direction. Our economic condition is perilous. We're trillions of dollars in debt. Trillions. You know, they show 18 trillion. That's on paper, but that's not the unfunded debt we have. If you throw in Social Security, Medicare, and now Obamacare, you start getting up into maybe 50 or more trillion dollars in debt. How will we pay that off? And we elect leaders who seem to want to rule us, not lead us or govern us. And of course, as we talked before, our population is fractured and divided along many lines, race, gender, religion. And we have foreigners that flood across our southern border at will. And they're rewarded for breaking our laws by getting driver's license, work permits, free health care in many cases, going to the hospital, where some go broke. And still, as a nation, we don't really look to God for guidance. We're really not crying out for guidance from God. And now that we're thoroughly depressed with all this, and as well we should be, I guess, let's turn to Deuteronomy 28 and see if we see anything there that kind of seems familiar to what's going on with us today. Deuteronomy 28, 1-6. If you fully obey the Lord your God, that's verse 1, and carefully follow all the commands I give you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on earth. Of course, this is Moses talking to Israel after they've received the covenant. Now, all these blessings will come upon you and accompany you if you obey the Lord. You will be blessed in the city and blessed in the country. The fruit of your womb will be blessed, and the crops of your land and the young of your livestock. Your basket and your kneading trough will be blessed. You will be blessed when you come in and blessed when you go out. I think we've been there as a nation. We've been to those heights. In verse 10, then all the peoples on the earth will see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they will fear you. The Lord will grant you abundant prosperity in the fruit of your womb and the young of your livestock, in the land he swore to your fathers to give you. The Lord will open the heavens, the storehouse of his bounty, to send rain on your land in season and bless all the work of your hands. You will lend to many nations, but will borrow from none. Well, we've been there. We rebuilt Germany after World War II. We rebuilt Japan. I can remember when the millions were starving in India, and we sent shipload after shipload of food there. We even exported our technology, and now they're pretty successful with that. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail if you pay attention to the commands of your God. Key word, if you pay attention to God's commands. So we've been there. But let's look at the other side of the coin. Verse 15, same chapter. However, if you do not obey the Lord your God and do not carefully follow all his commands and decrees I'm giving you, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And you will be cursed in the city and country. Your basket and kneading trough will be cursed. The fruit of your womb will be cursed. And that reminds me of another statistic they put out the other day, that of all the different ethnic groups in America, there's only one group that is having enough children to replace their population, and that was the Hispanics. I guess all the rest of us are not. So it seems like we're not being blessed in that regard. You will be cursed when you come in and cursed when you go out. And Let's see, verse 29. If I can find my place. At midday, you will grope around like a blind man in the dark. You will be unsuccessful in everything you do. And day after day, you will be oppressed and robbed with no one to rescue you. This part about groping around like a blind man, it kind of reminds me of some of our leadership, I think. And verse 43. The alien who lives among you will rise above you higher and higher, but you will sink lower and lower. He will lend to you, but you will not lend to him. He will be the head, and you will be the tail. So I think we can see the direction we're headed in. It's not that good. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah 1, verse 2. Hear, O heavens, listen, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. The ox knows his master, the donkey his owner's manger, but Israel does not know. My people do not understand. And I think that kind of says a lot about us these days. Verse 5 also. Well, let's skip that. Verse 5. Let's go to verse 23. For the sake of brevity, I think. It says, your rulers are rebels, companions of thieves. They all love bribes and chase after gifts. They do not defend the cause of the fatherless. The widow's case does not come before them. Sounds a little familiar, too. But you know, the Bible is full of promise. It really the only promise we have that we can really trust. And so I'd like to end on that note. Some good news. And there's much of it in the Bible. But let's go to Isaiah 9. Isaiah 9, 6 and 7. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government, notice that, the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? I think we all agree it's talking about Christ. Of the increase of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. Well, that hasn't happened yet, but it's sure and certain promise.
Thank all of you for helping us celebrate today our 44th wedding anniversary. We have a little card here. It reads, Dear Church Family, we just wanted to let you know how much we truly appreciate our anniversary celebration. It was so kind and caring and thoughtful. We love you all. Your kindness is greatly appreciated. And it was tasty, too. And I still have more snacks left. Some in my office fridge, too. I took some from the office as well. My wife says, you know, this is getting to be a scandal, your love for food. So I'll I'm not going to promise to be formed, but I'll think about it. The title of this message is Stand Against the Bandwagon Effect. It's one of the more powerful tools to manipulate people and to propagandize people. It's called the bandwagon effect. There was an experiment done by a reputable social scientist. He had straws, short ones and long ones. He had Confederates. And all the people in the room were Confederates except the subject. And they'd all be told, you pick the longest straw and say it's the shortest. And then the subject would come in, and would you believe, now they could manipulate a few things like how nice they were to him, but still, overall, a large percentage of people would, after all the others had said what their eyes told them was not true, would say what their eyes told them was not true was true. And it kind of wasn't anything questionable, like gray shades. It's short or it's long. It's like, you're kidding me. It actually worked that way. And the etymology of this is, in the old days in politics, they'd have a big bandwagon going through town, you know, with a band and a big sign for a particular politician. And if you wanted to show your support, you jumped up on the bandwagon as it rolled through town. And obviously, you want to create the impression that it is what everybody is doing. Or one way to look at it, I remember in junior high school, one particular election, a kid who shouldn't have won, but the more qualified kid didn't, who was much smarter and better overall scholar, etc. They created the impression that the bandwagon was going to go for the other kid, the C-minus kid. And you know how young people are. They all want to vote for the winner. So if you can create the impression that he's going to win, he does win. The media can even do that. They can give you the impression that something is supported by everybody with any brains or any direction or intelligence. And they make it so because then everybody says, well, that's what everybody is supposed to do. I'm going to jump on the bandwagon and do it also. And it's just, it's an effective propaganda tool. I want to go to, and so we're going to talk about how to resist the bandwagon effect and understand it. Well, there's an example in 1 Kings 22 that I want to read because it makes a certain point. In this particular case, if you read all the context, all of the prophets and advisors to Ahab are telling him that God is going to bless him and his strategy for war will work, and he should go ahead and do it. And there are a number of those examples in the Bible. They're a bunch with Jeremiah as well. They all tell him that he's doing the right thing. 1 Kings 22. But then he gets an ally from Judah, and he doesn't quite trust all those prophets of the northern tent. He says, isn't there a prophet of Jehovah? That's the anglicized version of Jehovah, but Jehovah, you know, the historical God of Israel, because he's a reasonably good king. And Ahab says, well, there's one, but he never, ever says anything good about me. I wonder why he says nothing good about Ahab and Jezebel's rulership. I wonder. He never says anything good about me. He says, well, I still want to hear what he says. So before he gets there, in verse 13, the messenger that was gone to call Micaiah spake unto him, saying, behold, now the words of the prophets declare, and by context he means all the prophets, everybody is saying it, the prophets declare good unto the king with one mouth. In other words, everybody is saying the exact same thing with one mouth. So like if you watch the media, you can go to the three networks. They all say the exact same thing, almost the exact same order. I've been watching it for years. There's very little variety. They all say the same thing, which is not good. With one mouth, let your word, I pray, be like the word of them and speak that which is good. By the way, he was coming out of jail and with threats of being put back in jail. And I'm sure there's a little bit of threat in there. We probably don't sense it, but there's a little bit of pressure. Now, everybody is saying this. You need to say the right thing. If you read the rest of the story, he actually first says it in kind of a mocking way. And the king says, okay, you're not being honest with me. Tell me what you really think. You're just being sarcastic. Then he tells him the truth. And the truth is, he's headed for disaster if he does what all the prophets of Israel are telling him to do. In other words, the good prophet had to stand up and resist the bandwagon effect. And we read it, it sounds simple, but I imagine it was a lot harder than it sounds. Like a good prophet, he told him the truth. I want to turn here, but if you go to Jeremiah 36, 2 and 3, you see clearly in Jeremiah that he says, what a good prophet does is he tells the leadership something like this. You're wrong, and you need to turn around. You need to go the opposite direction. God doesn't send a prophet to tell people how wonderful they are. He sends a prophet to tell them, you need to repent. And it's quite clear if you read Jeremiah 36, 2 and 3. Now, that's what a true prophet does. The false ones tell them something like, hey, it's wonderful. Just keep doing what you're doing. And the bandwagon effect does work on most people. But a true prophet of God, because God is with him, has the strength to tell people the truth. Like Elijah stood up against 400 prophets of Baal, you know, Mount Carmel, you know, in chapter 18. It's a great story. Obviously, he was right and they were wrong. And of course, the truth is, the reason we're going to go to verse 20 and 23 to get a little more picture of what was going on. Because what is going on is actually a spiritual battle, but I'm sure Ahab and all of his normal prophets who've been corrupted can't see. But it's in the Bible. So let's look at the spiritual part of it. 2 Kings 22. Verse 20, and the Lord, which means Jehovah, that, you know, because Baal means God, too. That's why sometimes it misleads you a little bit in the Old Testament. But Jehovah, the God, the historical God of Israel, said, who shall persuade Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? And one said on this manner, another said on that manner. And there came forth a spirit and stood before him and said, I will persuade him. By the way, we believe that Satan does get to go to God's throne every now and then and accuse the brethren and offer sneaky advice. I mean, he's not in control, but he gets to come, and like in the case of Job and other examples that you know of. So probably Satan or one of his demons was there. And the Lord said to him, wherewith? He said, I will go, verse 22, and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all of his prophets. And he said, and that shall persuade him to go forth. Now, therefore, behold, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all, that word A-L-L, all the prophets, and the Lord has spoken evil concerning you. You often wonder about, and I say this every now and then, could our leadership get some better advisors? Could our leadership get some better advisors? Thank you. I hope that all got recorded. It probably did, but at a lower volume. I hope my leadership can get some better advisors. But I can remember to get the mic off the floor. It's better if it's sitting right here, but never mind. I'll call it a senior moment. Could get some better advisors. Because it seems like they go from one bad news advisor to another one. He's almost as bad as the one they had before, if not worse. And you know, if you have that kind of, it's almost as if God is allowing, giving us bad advisors. But then again, I think we aborted 50 million babies? Ahab also let his son sacrifice his son to Baal, too. So, and most abortions are done for financial convenience of the mother and the father. There's a little bit of parallel there. And the spirit that rules the airwaves of this age, and we won't turn there, but it's Ephesians 2:2. It says Satan is the ruler of the air. So what gets broadcast is probably heavily influenced by lying spirits. And I know people won't agree with that. Oh, the media is objective and they're trying to give us the truth. I got disillusioned with that many, many years ago as I start learning things and carefully watching their behavior. And I just know that's not true. I probably told you the Vietnam story, but I'll tell it one more time. It's a little repetition, not bad. I was there during the Tet Offensive, and the casualties were 10 for the North Vietnamese Army to one of ours and the South Vietnamese Army. But the American media portrayed it as a vast victory. And we know from when communism fell, all those cables became public knowledge. And then we know that the North Vietnamese generals, after Tet Offensive, were thinking about making a deal with the Americans, stopping the war, because that was such a heavy defeat for them. But then they read the Western press, and they said, look, they're saying we won. I mean, the American media and some of Western Europe as well. They're saying we won. This will put tremendous pressure on the Americans to leave. All we have to do is just hang on, you know, just keep fighting until, and of course it turned out to be that way. Maybe it's a little more complicated. But let's just say that's true. If they had made that treaty in 68, that means all the Americans who died the next, was it 3.5 years, were wasted because of the lying media. That's guess and opinion, because of the lying media. And here's another example from the internet of the bandwagon effect. Bill says he likes the idea, and this is some internet research. I can't talk about the accuracy of it, but it's probably accurate. Bill says that he likes the idea that people should work for their welfare when they can. His friends all laugh at him and accuse him of being a fascist. And he may get ostracized. He decides to recant and abandon his position and to avoid any further rejection. Bill says, I like really high-quality music. And it's higher quality than a lot of this modern stuff. And then his friends all jump on him. That's stuff for old people. That's music for old people. Only wussies listen to that. They have a negative word there. And then so he says, oh, okay, Anthrax is a musical group. Anthrax rules, and he agrees with them. Now, that supposedly is an example that transpired where the majority got this kid to change his beliefs on politics and music because he didn't want to seem out of sorts. That's an example of the bandwagon effect. The media creates the illusion that everybody is for it, and so if they can keep that going, then eventually they can get the majority to actually be for it. When you might argue that, and their goal is to undermine the Judeo-Christian ethics of America and maybe the Western world in general, I would argue that probably the last decade or two, the majority have Judeo-Christian ethics, believe in traditional marriage, but the media creates the bandwagon effect that that's not so. And the longer they do it, it actually becomes true. And I was reading, we were listening to a guy who claims to be an expert. I won't all the details, but he says ever since World War I, liberals, progressives, communists, and those who don't believe in God, they've been on the installment plan. They believe they can turn this country around, but do it gradually, little, by infiltrating all the institutions, like higher education, the media, Hollywood. And he says they've actually succeeded little by little. And they're always pushing. I figure the devil is encouraging it, of course. They're always pushing. And he says this new thing, Common Core, he says they have immersed our kids in anti-Judeo-Christian ethics. Even the math problems are worded in things that are, you know, anti-godly. And they've kicked out much of the classical literature. They'll be reading EPA manuals for reading practice, which, you know, those are environmental radical stuff. I'm thinking, wow. And it's like, if you immerse a kid, and they would like to get most of the kids in preschool away from their parents at an earlier age. Taxpayers pay for it, of course. And then they will influence those schools' curriculums. So little kids from 3 and 4 all the way are going to be immersed in anti-Judeo-Christian ethics, anti-God. And it seems to be working. So I'll answer my question. How do we resist the bandwagon effect? Because it will be all around us. It's in the movies. It will be on the radios. It's in much of the popular literature, the books, higher education. As I say, popular TV sitcoms. And we said this last night in the podcast. Only about 25% of Americans go to church on a regular basis. And at least half those churches, if not more, do very little actual teaching of the Bible. That means maybe something like 80-some percent of Americans do not get their knowledge of right and their knowledge of wrong from any religious teacher. They get it from the media. That ought to scare you. Where do they get their wrong? Especially people 50 and under. Because a lot of us older people, we've gotten at least a little bit of something before they turn the tide. They're working on us too, don't get me wrong, but especially those under 50. And it is amazing how few people respond to any evangelistic efforts we put out that are under 50. We get some, and that's wonderful, but it's amazing. Where are all the young people? And by the way, other churches have the same problem. Terry was talking about the church he grew up in northern Arkansas, and he went back for, I think it was his mom's funeral. And it was when he was a kid, it was all kinds of ages, it was a bustling church. And I think he said there were like 10 people left, and they were all senior citizens. And he was in shock. Where are all the young people in that little town? And their doctrines were such that they could easily be popular. And so, it was just, that's the trend. Well, how do we resist the bandwagon effect? Number one, we need to know the truth, know the truth as deeply and profoundly as possible, and keep reinforcing it. Come to church, come to our studies, read good material. Keep reinforcing the truth in our minds. Don't assume that, well, I'm impregnable to all those bad influences. No, we're not. I wish we were, but we're not. These tactics have worked. They really have worked. Let me give you, I was planning on mentioning it later, but I'll mention it now just because it fits a little bit. Dr. Goebbels was the Reich minister or the propaganda minister for the Third Reich, all through the 1930s and into the 40s. And he said this, and wrote it as well. He said that direct propaganda, they did some of that too, but direct propaganda is not as effective as we make a movie to directly propagandize people who worship Hitler, follow the Third Reich, hate Jews, and all the things that we want to do. He says that's not nearly as effective as indirect propaganda. So the way they ran it, eventually they had total control of all the media in Germany, newspapers, radio, and he made all the newsreels. And he put propaganda in the newsreels. Well, that's probably the equivalent to our TV news. And you think about Brian Williams, caught in several lies. They've been lying all the time. I think it was an Army newspaper interviewed people that caught him in the lie that was about to come out. That's why he admitted it. He didn't admit it because he wanted to. He's about to get caught. They lie all the time. Dan Rather, you're probably all famous, his big lies. Truth is the last thing they're concerned with. They're concerned with their agenda. But we might, and he put it in his movies. And in the movies, he made Jews terrible villains. And we'll go to all the horrible things he did. But let's admit the obvious. Germany was the most educated country in the world in the 1930s. And also, they put it in places like Hungary and other parts of Central Europe as they got more control. He prepared the people of Europe for the final solution. Here's something that most people don't know. It wasn't just Germans who held those Jews in different places and ghettos and then put them on trains. It was most of the people in Europe. I think Denmark was the only country in that central part of Europe that resisted, that protected the Jews. Only Denmark. All the other countries, including the French gendarmes, the people in Hungary and in Poland, I guess they had their own degree of anti-Semitism he tapped into. What I'm saying is these propaganda techniques work. You put it in the movies, you put it in the newsreels, and people are being brainwashed, and they don't even know to resist it because you immerse them in it. And that's what Goebbels did, and it worked. Those 6 million Jews were killed because he got the anti-Semitism stirred up. And at least a lot of those people, until things went bad, literally worshipped Hitler. I mean, it's, you know, stupid little guy. It's really unbelievable, but that's the power of propaganda. So what I'm saying is we need to know the truth. Reinforce it every week. Don't take it for granted that we can't be influenced. Get to know the true God as much as we can. Get to know the true God now. Be so steeped in God's truth that we're anchored. You know, like a big anchor in a ship that holds it in place, that all the waves of the media can't move you. We're so anchored, no matter what, we will stay where we are and even grow. And two, pray for spiritual eyesight. You know, I was thinking about that section that Mr. Hill was in. You know, Moses said in the next chapter, 29:4, Deuteronomy, God said, oh, if only God would give you all a heart and eyes to see the truth. But the Israelites weren't given that then. That will happen when Christ comes back. But they weren't given the Spirit then. And they really, what can I say? They didn't really get it most of the time. And there were people, there were false prophets among them, always subtly stirring up trouble for Moses. You know, they're plotting and scheming. And to the point where God, and I think God, honestly, you know, when it said in Numbers 14 that he was going to wipe out Israel, start with Moses until Moses talked him out of it, I don't think that's an exaggeration. There were always false prophets among the people, misleading them. They wanted to go back to paganism in Egypt, which is kind of hard to imagine. They got their freedom, but that's the power of evil influences. But as we said, most Americans get their knowledge of right and wrong from the media, from the sitcoms, from as well as the news, higher education, etc., and all of them are dyed in the wool, anti-Judeo-Christian values, anti-Bible values, ungodly, and it is working. It is having its effect. If we were to go back to 1 Kings 18, remember I mentioned Elijah facing the false priest of, well, he actually wanted the false priests of Jezebel, the priest and priestesses of Ashtaroth, but Jezebel kept them from coming. But the others were there. And I want to just read 1 Kings 18:21, the statement that Elijah made to them before his great sacrifice and all the wonderful things he did. 1 Kings 18:21, Elijah came unto all the people and said, how long will you halt between two opinions? You know, if Jehovah be God, you know, the historical God of Israel, follow him. But if Baal, now Baal also means Lord or God, it's just a pagan God, then follow him. And the people answered him not a word, because they were confused. They really didn't know. They kind of liked following all the gods. Well, we follow our historical God a little bit. We kind of blend it all, and we like a lot of this pagan stuff. And they were literally confused. They didn't really know. Aren't people really ignorant of the Bible and of a lot of biblical principles in today's world, and getting more so? You hear these shows where someone like certain of these comedians go out and they ask people basic questions. Is that the Bill of Rights or the Ten Commandments? They have no idea. Who did we fight in the American Revolution? And I've heard some unbelievable statements like, was it Korea? I mean, stuff that doesn't, like, who was the first president of the United States? Some of these are college students. A high percentage get it wrong. I'm thinking, wow, they don't teach anything in public school and in college anymore. They're totally ignorant. They don't know anything. And some of it, of course, has been going on for generations. I want to read this story. Now, this is a song by Ray Stevens, I'm My Own Grandpa's Lyrics. You got to think of Ray Stevens singing this to music, and it makes more sense. He did a thing about the camel. Anyway, it's called I'm My Own Grandpa. Many, many years ago, when I was 23, I married a widow who was pretty as can be. The widow had a grown-up daughter who had hair of red.
My father fell in love with her, and soon the two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law. It really changed my life, for now my daughter was my mother because she was my father's wife. And to complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy. My little baby then became a brother-in-law to Dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he were my uncle, then that also made him brother of the widow's grown-up daughter, who was, of course, my new stepmother. Father's wife then had a son who kept them on the run, and he became my grandchild, for he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother, and if it makes me blue, because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother, too. Now, if my wife is my grandmother, then I'm her grandchild, and every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild, because now I've become the strangest case you ever saw. As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa. He's his own grandpa. Well, isn't that a little bit how the world is? It's full of decadence, confusion, and maybe all the family trees don't branch. But it's almost like they've made a mockery of family values, and it's going down fast. It's going down fast. It really is. Girls talk like boys. I probably shouldn't say this, but I go out of my classroom to go up the stairs in my office. There's this big poster, and it shows this girl sitting on, it's a photograph, sitting on this, they're both college students, sitting on his lap. She has her legs, she's wearing jeans, around his neck, and it says they're going to have three programs on campus about sex signals. I'm saying, what? What do we need to be giving these young people information? Now, I haven't been there, so I can't say what they're talking about. But knowing what goes on in higher education, what the young people with all their hormones need to be giving lectures? And the girl is sitting on his lap. You get the context. It's not like, oh, well, it's not like they're talking about abstinence or something like that. I think, wow, what kind of confusion is going on? And this, by the way, is at a local university. This is not the way out crazy ones back east. It's filtering down to everybody. Decadence is all over. And you'll ask me, well, what about journalistic integrity? Here's what it used to look like back when the Founding Fathers. There were newspapers on both sides. You'll even see newspapers with titles, the Republican, the Democrat. There were newspapers on both sides. And so the balance, somewhat balanced, you got both sides of the story because there were newspapers you could read. Most big cities had two or three newspapers. You could read news on both sides. But what has happened in the last, I'd say, four, five, six decades, as the anti-Judeo-Christian forces have infiltrated higher education and the media. All the journalist professors are all far leftists. All the media says the same thing. There's no variety. I mean, all the mainstream media say exactly the same thing, and they clearly support politicians that are far left, that are anti-family, anti-Judeo-Christian values. And they protect those politicians and attack those who step out of line. And they create the, what I call the bandwagon effect, is those guys, the ones they support, are inevitably going to win and the others are losers. And I guess it works. And there is no journalistic integrity. My own opinion is they don't even try to be unbiased. They gave that up a couple decades ago, and it's getting worse. As the younger ones come in, they have even less integrity than the old journalists who at least sometimes try to be a little unbiased sometimes. I don't think they even try to cover it up anymore. We are what we are, and we're going to brainwash the American public and lead you into the new big government. You got to think about this big government thing. Why did the Founding Fathers want checks and balances? Because absolute power corrupts absolutely. The bigger the government, the more corruption and the less freedom. The average person probably doesn't know that because they don't teach the Constitution and that sort of thing anymore. What the media should be, journalistic integrity should be, they should speak truth to power. In other words, they should challenge the government. Whenever they're wrong, they should remind them, you're violating the Constitution. You've got too much corruption. You're ineffective. You're wasting money. In other words, the media should be the critic of the government. That's what they wanted the Fourth Estate to be. They can, obviously, truth can be depending on the eye of the beholder. But if you get enough journalists with independent thinking and they're all trying to be watchdogs of the government, that forces the government to be more honest and, you know, and better. We don't have watchdog journalists. We have lapdog journalists who bark out propaganda for the most liberal, progressive, socialist, communist politicians. And let's see what the result of that is. Let's go to Isaiah 5. And I know a lot of this, what I'm saying, is probably controversial to some people, but I think you all know enough to know this is basically true. But some who may see this tape later may wonder. Because the journalists are good. I mean, they're attractive people, and they have really interesting news, and it's sometimes happy news, and it goes over well, but it's not what it should be. Isaiah 5, verse 20. Now, this is him talking to the people that are leaders and influencers of Judah, but the principle would apply to us too. Woe unto them that call evil good, good evil, that put darkness for light, light for darkness, that put bitterness for sweet and sweet for bitter. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes. Oh, they think they're so progressive and they're so wise, and we backwards people who cling to our guns and Bibles, we're so backwards. We need their great progressive leadership. You can almost sense that arrogance. Woe unto them that think they are wise in their own eyes, prudent in their own sight. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine and anyway. And then he goes on to other things that they justify the wicked for reward. Verse 23. And there's a lot of corruption between the media and the government. People go back and forth. It's really not what it should be. And let's go to Isaiah 59. Again, some similar principles. Isaiah 59, verse 14. And the way he puts it is kind of very poetic. Judgment is turned away backward. In other words, instead of people seeing things with good, clear common sense and logic, they're like flipped to see things the wrong way. Judgment is turned away backward. Justice stands afar off. Truth is fallen in the streets. Isn't that true? Truth has fallen in the streets. It doesn't exist anymore. It has fallen in the streets. And equity cannot enter. Yea, truth faileth. And he that departs from evil makes himself a prey. In other words, if you stand up too publicly for good things, the media might attack you. I've seen some victims of it. I'm not saying that the people they attack are totally perfect. They go in their background, search back 50 years. We'll find somebody doesn't like them. They did something wrong. But the point, reason why they're attacking them is because you didn't support the evil direction things are going in. That's what's going on in much of the media, much of America. I'm going to go to Matthew 24:37. This came out in the podcast yesterday, and it's an interesting perspective. Matthew 24:37 reads, "But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be." Notice our day. "For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, to the day that Noah entered the ark, and knew not." Why didn't they know that bad things were coming? Well, two things occur to me. They weren't getting any biblical prophetic warnings. Because Noah was giving them warnings, they were ignoring him or laughing at him. Or, oh, that stuff is just crazy. Don't worry about it. God is not unhappy with the society before the flood. You're just doing fine. Now, we don't have a whole lot of details about the pre-flood world, but we know it was thoroughly evil, so evil that God said, I'm just going to get rid of the society and start again with the one righteous man we've got. But they weren't getting that from whatever kind of religious leaders they had. And let's put it in a political sense. I believe that most Americans have no idea how bad our foreign policy has been in the last couple years. I mean, the average person, if they watch someone like NBC News, they have no idea how we have become, my opinion, but our enemies see us as weak and feckless, and our enemies no longer fear us. They think, like the Iranians, let's make a deal with them. We'll string them along until we're just about ready to get the A-bomb, and now they're getting all their money we held frozen. They're getting all the trade. Their economy is good shape. All that money they're using to build missiles, to build the A-bomb, we just keep stalling the Americans because they want to make a deal with us. I see that clear as a bell. But I'll bet you the average American who watches some deceptive media like NBC has no idea what's going on. They think all is well. The whole world will be somewhat united against America. Our military will be, our military morale is going down, down, down. They're cutting the military. They're making a hero out of a deserter. But the average public knows none of that. And when bad things happen, they will be caught completely off guard. Let me give you the World War II example. I give the British credit. There were some newspapers that did pick up Winston Churchill's writings, but he was the laughing stock in the British Parliament and among most of the media during the 30s. When he warned about Hitler and him breaking the treaties, you know, the Germans were not supposed to have an air force. All the different things he broke as he built a war machine. And, of course, Churchill said that was a very preventable war. If we now know the generals didn't like Hitler, they would have sacked him if the British and French had stood up. But the average person in Britain, at least during that period, they were listening to most of their media and most of their politicians who, everything is okay. We don't have to worry about it. All of a sudden, one day, they woke up. Well, within a few weeks, all of Europe was taken by the Nazis. Like, can you believe this? But they weren't ready because their media didn't give them. Now, as I say, they did have one thing. Some papers, and even in America, did cover Churchill. So when things got bad, they did turn to Churchill for prime minister. I'm not even sure our media has even given us what the British got and the French got in the 1930s. We're given even less, unless you listen to certain people. But let's go to 1 Thessalonians 5. There's a similar principle there that I want to mention, 1 Thessalonians 5. And similar principle. As I flip through my Bible slowly, sometimes the pages just don't turn fast. But the principle is still the same. People are not informed like they should be. Verse 2, 1 Thessalonians 5. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. It's going to be a sudden thing. For when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them and travail as a woman with a child, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness that you should be overtaken as a thief. You are the children of light. Now, what I take that to mean is while the world is listening to the lying media, they don't see all the dangers of war, and also God's spiritual retribution coming, we in God's church, brethren of light, we will see both the spiritual warnings and the geopolitical warnings because we see it coming. But a lot of people didn't see Pearl Harbor, a lot of those things coming because they were not prepared. Hopefully we're ready for an avalanche of bandwagon effect that's coming. I want to read one final scripture, 2 Timothy 3. This is how the world's going to be at the end time. And it will, no doubt, create a bandwagon effect to make everybody like this. And we have to resist it. 2 Timothy 3. This I know also, that in the last days, dangerous times shall come. Verse 2. For men shall be lovers of their own selves. And the media and much of the world will push this. Covetous, boasters. I remember when athletes were always properly humble, and you didn't see a lot of boasting and bragging. You know, I'm the greatest. They dare not throw in my territory because I'm the best there's ever been. And they're now celebrating the athletes who are that, I don't know, outrageous. It's a different world. You know, you used to let other people praise you, but boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents. And I don't think it just means children. I think it means adults who don't show the respect for their elders either. Unthankful. You owe it to me. You owe it to me. Unholy. Without natural affection. Truth breakers. False accusers. Incontinent. Fierce. You know, I was looking at the violence that ISIS is doing, and it's attracting some young people, believe it or not. And I'm saying this is worse than the Nazis. The Nazis kept their stuff secret. Now, I'm not saying the Nazis weren't real, real bad. Don't get me wrong. But they weren't bragging, and they actually took cameras away from German soldiers who took pictures of people being shot in ditches and stuff because they didn't want it out. They kept it as much as they could a secret. Well, ISIS brags about it. They put it on the Internet. Unbelievable atrocities. I won't mention them all, but unbelievable stuff. And the world is kind of getting used to it. And some young people are attracted to it. I'm thinking, are they crazy? This is the world we're, and who knows what they're going to do next. Each new atrocity seems to be worse than the next. Fierce. Despisers of those that are good. Boy, you see a lot of that. Traitors. Boy, patriotism is in the tank. Heady. High-minded. Lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. Having a form of godliness. They might pretend to be religious, but denying the power thereof. Yeah, we're religious, but it doesn't tell us what we can and cannot do. From such, turn away. And then that is what is coming. And we hopefully won't be swept away. We need to stand with God, stand strong until Christ comes and puts us in God's family.